Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
What is up, everybody? This is Zach Matchett filling in for Steve. I will do my best Steve impersonation today and will fail miserably, but I'm happy to be here guest hosting today, New Life Live. We'll be here taking your calls. 1-800-229-3000 is the number. But more importantly, I'm hanging out with some awesome people. I have Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Sherry Keffer today. Hi, ladies.
Hey, Zach. It's great to be with you, Zach. Hey, I like the what's up. Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, that's not a Steve impression. We like it. That's a Zach impression.
Oh, thank goodness. It's He'll be perfect. So thrilled that I didn't impersonate
what's
him.
What's up?
Yeah, right, right. Very un-Steve-like. So just a little bit about me. For those that don't know, been married almost 11 years to my wife, Lauren. We have four children, a six-year-old in kindergarten this year and crushing it. She's doing great. One set of twins, two kids. There we go. Important clarity. Luke and Emily, who are four, and then our youngest daughter just turned one last week, and so we have our hands full. But I serve as one of the pastors, student pastors at the church that Steve and his family go to in central Indiana called Northview. And as a youth pastor, I find myself really pushing our students now more than ever as we're coming out of the pandemic, as we find ourselves probably in some ways even the most accessible generation ever digitally and yet the loneliest and oftentimes the most isolated, is I tell our students, don't be a Christian by yourself. Find your community, find people around you. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts from not just a Christian perspective, but also from the therapeutic side. Like, how is having the right community, the right people around you, how is that helpful and beneficial to the recovery or the healing process that people find through counseling? And then conversely, like, where is a lack of community actually detrimental? Sherry, what do you guys think about that?
Well, let me just start with what would Jesus do? Because think about it, even Jesus had community. He had 12 disciples around him. And what I love about that example, and the more I've gotten to know just each character, is that they were not perfect. And I think sometimes we think we really can't get involved with the community if we don't have our stuff together. But the people around Jesus didn't even have their stuff together. But he knew it was important for him to not even go alone. And I just know from my own life, from my own recovery, I've had multiple opportunities to be in group because I've needed it. I've needed the accountability. I've needed to hear other stories so I can finally see myself, you know, instead of spotting it and godding it. You know, I look at my own codependent recovery and say, gosh, that was some of the most powerful times of my life, is to take ownership over how I was overcaring. And I couldn't really see what I was doing until I got into a group of people that were like me. And then I started to really make some changes and grow.
Yeah, that's great. Alice, what do you see as people that don't have that or are struggling to find it, how that can that be a hindrance to finding that healing and recovery?
I think isolation feels more comfortable on the surface level, and the digital realm that you were referring to, Zach, enhances that belief that we're more comfortable hiding behind our screens and talking to people that way. But true comfort and the kind of true healing that Sherry's talking about really only comes through relationship and face-to-face relationship. And so we've got to get over that hump of the discomfort of getting out from behind our screen and getting in front of other people.
So I got to say something really quick. I had a training. It was a 4-day training with other therapists, you know, to keep up on our skills. And no kidding, there were 60 of us. And when the person would start to teach, I mean, most of the time, there were like 54 blank screens. They were black. And I thought, oh boy, something's happened to us that we even can be digital and not even want to show our faces. And it was hard for me to show my face the whole time, but I thought, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to lead by example. But wow, Zach, you bring up such a great point about how we need to connect.
Absolutely. More accessibility ever than ever, and yet less connected. Isn't that crazy? We're going to take your calls today, 1-800-223.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome again to New Life Live. This is Zach Matchett, Dr. Sherry Keffer, and Dr. Alice Benton. We are sitting in for Steve today. We want to get to your calls. Again, if you want to call about anything, you can reach us at 1-800-229-3000. And so we have our first caller here. This is Juan. He's calling from California. I'm going to go ahead and get him on the line here. Juan, thanks for joining the show. How can we help you today?
Hi. Is this the perfect day to call or what? It's funny because the question I have is... I wrote it down. Is there some professional help toward recovery out there for those who struggle with screen addiction, such as Instagram and Twitter? So I wasn't as engaged prior to the pandemic, but since then I've really been, I've really leaned into it, and now it's a problem.
Yeah. We've seen a huge uptick in the use of it. I mean, the consumption is certainly higher, and I love that you're using the recovery language for even something like this. And so, Alice, I'll send it to you first. I mean, again, from the counseling standpoint, is this something we could be addicted to? If so, how do we get off of it and find our way again?
Well, Juan, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's a second part to the question, but I don't know if I should ask it now or later.
Yeah, ask it.
Okay, so it gets complicated for me because I'm actually into, I do media production. So as my job, I'm required to look at the screen. Not necessarily social media, but I'm on the screen all the time. And now, of course, my wife says, you're on the screen all the time. And it's true. It's 100% true. So I need some help.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate the clarity.
One, the research is showing us that 1 in 4 people, both adults and youth, reach the level of screen addiction, the diagnostic criteria for screen addiction. And I would say the general population that has regular access to screens, we at least are at the level of problematic screen use, where it impairs some area of our life, whether it's our marriage, our parenting, our work. So you are certainly not alone in the struggle whatsoever. But you've got something that many of us don't have, which is the awareness and the humility to admit that your wife is right. So I respect very much that you're able and willing to say that. And I would say that screen addiction is actually treatable as most addictions are, because the solution to screen addiction is so similar to the solution to other addictions as well. So I'll just name off 2 aspects of it. And one is looking at how you access emotional comfort. Because relational emotional comfort is the main solution to addictive problems. Because usually digital distraction is a way to soothe our own internal discomfort. But truth soothing comes from the form we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is getting into deep relationship and talking about what's going on the inside that we're trying to distract from with screen use. And the other piece is accountability, beginning to put into place setting goals, confessing on a regular basis what we're doing with our screens and how we're using them. And those are 2 forms of regular treatment of really any kind of addiction.
Yeah, that's great. Sherry, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I love what you said, Alice. It's so profound. I am going to add one more to what she said. And this might be the hardest one, Juan. But before I give you this one, I want to ask you a question. How does it feel when you're looking at Instagram and Twitter? What do you experience in your body? What feeling do you experience?
Again, I feel like I've been set up because my wife has been asking me, well, not exactly that specific question, but it made me reflect on what is it that I feel. And so during the pandemic, because I was not working as much, I would turn into it because it would make me feel like I was doing something, like I was getting information. I was on the inside somehow. I was being useful in some kind of a way.
So if you were to have a feeling, does it make you feel happy, sad, scared, mad? What would the feeling be?
Well, social media is kind of like it makes you pretty much experience a lot of different emotions. A lot of them are negative, though, because there's a lot of disagreement that happens.
Right, right. But I'm curious about you. I'm really curious about how it feels to you. What and it's so interesting to have to slow down this much to figure out what emotion happens when you're spending hours on social media. I'm not talking about your work time. I'm talking about your personal time. How does it feel?
It makes me feel like I don't want to say empowering, but in a way it does. It kind of gives me more information on something. It allows me.
So if it's a feeling, would you say I feel powerful?
I suppose.
Yeah. And yeah. So if we look at that and we feel powerful when we're spending time looking on our private time, that could be a motivator. If you're feeling stressed at home, if you're feeling stressed at work, if you're feeling anxious about what's happening in this world, right, with all the negative stuff that's out there, and then somehow you can escape into a powerful feeling, something that makes you feel good, big, powerful, in a world that feels very unraveled right now. Do you right. see how that feeding that feeling of powerful can be a hook in the addiction? And that's why it's probably the most difficult thing I'm going to ask you to do is the third part of an addiction intervention is to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. It's to stop using the thing that is causing you and your relationship harm.
Okay.
It could be alcohol. It could be work. It could be overeating and food. But in this case, your heart, your mind, and your brain likes that power that comes. And if you stopped, if you were to stop, let's just imagine for a second. Let's just say, okay, you're just to stop today. You said, oh my goodness, I called Zach, you know, and was on there, and Alice and Sherry, and they said, hey, dude, we get it. We appreciate you. We love your humility. They asked me to stop. What would it feel like if you were to, the next 7 days, go home and not be on any social media? What now comes up?
What now comes up? Okay, so who's going to listen to me?
Say more. No, say more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's going to listen to you? Can you say more? That's big.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so, you know, I, again, thinking about what you're saying, what do you feel? I feel, sometimes I feel validation. Okay, they're listening to me. They're,
yeah.
Somebody else is agreeing with me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, what's going on in the world, even if they disagree, they're still listening, and I can have some input toward that.
Love it. Love it. So you know how addictive validation and listening can be? It can be very addictive. Likes can be addictive. And the thing is, the reason I'm saying, what would happen if it stopped? Because guess who isn't feeling validated? Guess who isn't feeling listened to?
Well, I suppose that would be my wife, because she's the one that brought it up.
I know. And so addiction causes us to change a really healthy thing that that needs to be developed. And we exchange it for something that gives us a kick, an emotional boost, a high. That's why workaholics work so much and their families are dying. I think this is similar to workaholism. Wouldn't you say, Alice? I mean... In a way, I mean, it's different. You, Alice, are more of an expert in kind of the what it does to the brain and screen time, right? But as far as the emptiness that people feel in the relationship with people that are screen addicted, they feel alone. They feel detached. While you feel full, they feel very empty.
And even the fullness that one experiences while on screen is still superficial. And it's not the profound validation and fullness that God wants us to encounter in something like our marriage relationship. So a main part of the solution, Juan, will likely be developing a relationship where, with your wife, where you both ask for and receive healthy validation from one another.
Yeah.
So you might think about one step I would have you do is I would see if you would take some of your time and join a CODA group, C-O-D-A, because CODA, the core of CODA, is that I feel worthless. I'm not valuable. And so I need to extend myself in the world so that I will feel good about myself because I don't feel good about myself on the inside. And if you were to start going to a CODA group and if you were just to say, hi, my name is Juan, I'm here because I'm learning, just like I used to have had to do Juan, and say, you know, my codependency is the public. It's screen time. It's being validated. And I'm really trying to learn how to let that go. That could bring some accountability and help you do some work on the inside.
And I want you to consider some couples counseling sessions so that you can address this with your wife, because as we learn how your screen time affects her, it can develop a godly sorrow, which can be very motivating. Even on a supernatural level, it's motivating to change addictive behavior.
Yeah, Juan, thanks for being so open too, just in the responses and the question. and I would say too, I mean, it's easy to replace intimacy with other things. You'll go look for it if you're not sensing it or not feeling it. And that's probably what the allure of the digital accessibility we have is that, I mean, even Gen Z is identifying more with online tribes than in-person tribes. Yet if you talk to the average teenager or Gen Z person or really anybody, people still want face-to-face community. We talked about it at the beginning, like we still want those relationships. But the moment that we get it, we still want to find escapes because we find that the validation, the approval, the need to be needed, you know, the need to feel affirmed and validated, it can be more plentiful, frankly, with people that you really don't know on the social media side of it, and yet you'll be able to neglect those that maybe you're closest to. I mean, do you see that playing out in our culture right now?
Well, I mean, even if we just take Juan, and so Juan's not alone in this, Juan and his wife. What happens is when we spend so much screen time, then our wife or our husband's mad at us. And so that doesn't feel really fun to go back and repair when there's been tension around this thing that has taken so much space in our relationship. So it's very circular. But once somebody lays down that digital obsession, that digital addiction, and then says what you said, Alice, is just, I am so sorry. I'm realizing that this has become a big problem. I'm going to really work to lay that down. I'm asking you not to manage my job of trying to let go of it, but I want to be spending more time with you. That begins repair. So yeah, there's a lot of that needs to happen. And you're right, Zach, it's prevalent.
An in-person relationship is so much messier in some ways than the online relationships that we can edit. And we can review what we've written before we post it.
Yeah, or we can block, or we can do whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a faux intimacy at times. That's super helpful. I'd love to get to Jackie here. She's watching us online. And so, Jackie, you're with us on New Life Live. What can we do to help you today?
Yeah, hi. So my question for you is, how do I feel safe in a new community when my experience has been the opposite?
Can you tell us more?
Yes.
Because we hear you. It's so cool you called today because we're already talking about this.
Yes.
Right, yeah. So I've been abused by my father, and he has lived in the same community that I have, in a church. And this is, I just wrote this out, so I'll just read it. So in this community, let's see, let me just read the whole thing. How to feel safe in a new community when my experience is unsafety to a degree of an abuser being held up as a person who is not an abuser, but a person who is only recognized as a person without any fault regarding how he has treated me.
Wow.
So thanks for sharing that. Jackie, we want you to stay on the line because we want to be able to help you with that, because community needs to feel safe. That's what makes it the need for community there. And so we want to address that. We're going to take a break here in a little bit. Again, as a reminder, if you've given to New Life this month, the month of March, we're going to give you the book by Dr. Daniel Amen, Conquer Worry and Anxiety. He just shares behaviors and strategies to help you see benefits in your everyday life. It's a great resource for you. But Jackie, we'd like to get back to your question. It's a really important one because we know that we want communities to feel safe. And so we hope to take your call and listen. 229-3000, 1-800-229-3000. We'd love to.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Thanks again for joining us today on New Life Live. This is Zach Matchett filling in for Steve today with Dr. Sherry Keffer and Dr. Alice Benton. I want to quickly just plug a few of these workshops we have coming up. Here we have Every Man's Battle is April 8th in Columbus, Ohio. We'd love to see you a part of that. You can actually save $200 by registering before March 25th, which is this Friday. We also have our Emotional Freedom Online Workshop is April 30th, and if you register by April 15th, you can also save $100 on that. We have Jackie on the line with us talking about feeling unsafe in her community. Mentioned that she had been abused by her father. And Alice, you just want to have a more clarifying question maybe so we can help Jackie a little further.
Jackie, did anyone acknowledge the abuse and intervene on your behalf?
No. Well, I started meeting with a trauma therapist, and I think she's been the one person, but it was after, like, all of that had happened that I started meeting with her, and so I can feel safe in her office talking to her, but outside of that, I have not had that validation. It's been the opposite.
Did the abuse take place as a child?
It was continual from a child all the way up to my present day.
I'm so sorry.
Jackie, I'm going to ask a difficult question, and I ask you to just give me a headline answer, not the details. Can you tell us what form the abuse took? Was it verbal? Was it physical? Sexual?
It was physical and emotional.
Mm-hmm. And your father is considered maybe a leader in the community, and he's looked upon as a good man with no recognition of what took place in your home.
Right.
And is he a leader in the church as well?
Yeah, he was.
You know, you break my heart, Jackie, because it just makes me, you make me think about me and how scary it was for me to try to be normal in my world, which was completely unnormal. And my former husband, I don't know if you know this, Jackie, but was a pastor in a church. He was also a sex addict who was engaged in pornography, affairs, prostitutes. So I get what you're saying. When you have somebody that has a public image and they're behaving in a certain way, like no one knew. No one knew what was going on in our house. And it sounds like that's how it's been for you. How is he abusing you now? Do you have to have a relationship with him? Are you living near him? Do you feel like you have to take care of him? How does he even have access to you with him being so harmful, both physically and emotionally?
Well, so he's at a distance now, and I was trying to maintain a relationship really for my mom, you know, to have a relationship with my mom too. Unfortunately, through this, she's just been passive aggressive because of her own situation, I think, with him. But so I've cut off relationship with both of them now. So so I guess that's why I don't know what to do about feeling safe again and being able to try to feel safe in a community where, you know, it's going to be different. I just don't have a lot of trust.
Yeah, you know what I remember, Jackie, I actually drove several cities away to get into a group. And I started sharing my story in my group. I went to a codependent group. I wasn't aware of any sex addiction groups, or COSA was out back then, the co-addict model for betrayed partners. But I went to both. But I think for me, I found comfort in a community that was actually cities away. And I started telling my story. And every time I walked into the room, Jackie, I was afraid. I was afraid that somebody from our congregation would be there. I was afraid that somebody I might know might be there. I mean, I literally sat outside in my car and watched as people walked in to see if I could scout it out before getting in there. But what I found over time with people that I didn't know, but that could relate only by their own stories. They weren't my story, but they had similar stories of pain. Just talking about it, just telling people, seeing their faces wince, watching their jaws drop, maybe a domestic violence group would be a good place for you. But I'm so glad you have your therapist. But the next step is actually to find a safe place, a small group of people outside of your community that you can begin to tell your story and get comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Jackie, potentially a long-term goal to establish with your therapist, and this is long-term, is a confrontation, addressing this with your father, and or having your therapist advocate for you within the community. And I'm thinking, I wonder if any of the church elders need to know about this. If your father's in a position of leadership, but he's an abusive man, this may be something that is a long-term plan, might need to come to the attention of some of the elders at the church.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would challenge any pastor listening to this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jackie.
I have kind of a follow-up question based on that.
Will you stay on the line, Jackie? We're going to go to a break here. We'll stay on the line. We'd love to help you when we get back from our commercial break. Again, you can call in the New Life Live, 1-800-229-3000. We would love to take your calls.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the one-year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zipper Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome again. If you're just joining us, this is New Life Live. Zach Matchett here, filling in for Steve Arterburn. We're here with Dr. Sherry Keffer and Dr. Alice Benton. We have Jackie on the line. Again, we're taking your calls if you want to call. 1-800-229-3000 is the number. Jackie, you were sharing something, and I had to hit the pause button. I'm so sorry for us to get the commercial break, but I want to give it back to you so we can kind of finish our time with you today.
Okay, thank you. So I think we were just at the end, we're saying about a long-term goal being confronting them, like with my therapist, my parent, and then with the church. And I wanted to say that and ask you about this, because I did actually go to another leader in the church to expose this. And when I did, she dismissed me and saying, I know a lot of people have been through that, and as if it's like what I exposed was that he had been in an affair that my mother had confided in me, but she didn't have anyone to talk to about it, and I exposed that with this leader, and that because I wasn't ready to talk about the abuse personally with me, you know, and she passed me off. And so when I have gone to the leadership to try to address it, it's been more abusive.
I would agree.
And it's their response to me.
That's called treatment trauma. There's actually a name for it. So your dad not only abused you, he sexually betrayed your mom. And when you tried to bring that to the church, it was minimized. It was dismissed. They didn't do anything about it. And it breaks my heart. I just was talking. I was asked to write a chapter in a book to pastors to help them understand how much we need to be believed. Mm. We need to be believed when we come forward with things that have terrified us or incredibly harmed us. And I think well-meaning people in the ministry don't know how or what to do with us. I'm not making excuses for them. What I'm saying is I'm wanting to call them up to get higher level of training and support so that they can address it. I recently had a woman whose husband had sexually betrayed her. So this would be like your mom. And she went to the church, and it was one of the first times I heard a pastor say, and a pastor and another colleague at the church say, we want to meet with the therapists. We want to talk to the therapists to know what's going on. I know. I can hear it in your heart. It's like relief. We all long for that.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry about the treatment trauma. I'm sorry about the additional harm that you got when you weren't heard. It's not okay. You didn't deserve that on top of your pain already.
Yeah. Can I throw just one thing in here, too, just speaking as somebody who's done vocational ministry for 17 years, and I guess I want to address any church leader or ministry leader or pastor that may be listening today. I want you to have a really introspective self-examination, a conversation with yourself today. Ask yourself this. Is our church safe enough for someone to be brave enough to admit this kind of thing is happening?
Wow, is
because
that?
Because a community or a church is only as safe as what someone's brave enough to admit. And we should be asking ourselves as church leaders, are we the kind of church, the kind of culture in our church, the kind of staff integrity to take something like this and do swift investigation and do the right thing and for people to feel heard? And unfortunately, some people are safe enough to admit it, but is their action actually going to be taken? And I think that's a challenge for any church ministry leader that's listening today is the truth sets us free. We need to steward our roles well of people who are caretaking, shepherding, and leading people. And if people are feeling unsafe or unwilling to participate in a community because of harm that's been done to them, we should do everything that we can to eradicate that in the name of Jesus. Like, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so I just want to offer that in love as a challenge to all those that maybe serve in that role today. I just think that's so important. Alice, I want to toss it to you before we go to Larry here in a second.
Well, Jackie, the next step to work towards then perhaps may be either going back to that leader with your therapist advocating for you, as the Bible says that we go back with a witness, and or going above to the next level of leadership and developing that assertiveness is part of your work, of course, because you're coming out of a family dynamic of we keep it quiet, we minimize, we look the other way. And so what we're asking and what we're encouraging you to do is incredibly difficult, but it will be for your healing and for the sake of healing of the community itself, if they're willing to respond to you.
And I want you to get a copy of the book by Leslie Vernick. Jackie, it's called The Emotionally Destructive Relationship. She is an amazing biblicist that really clarifies how what is happening to you isn't okay, and she's written a book on it. I'd like for you to get it. And then I don't think we have it Not sure. But either. We'll send you a copy of Take Your Life Back. But I want you, we'll send you Take Your Life Back.
If we have that one, we'll send it to you.
Okay, that'd be great. But I want you to get that because I want to validate the crazy that you're feeling because you're not crazy. There's craziness happening around you. And we want to support you.
Absolutely. Well, you've heard a fourth voice join the room here today, and so I want to make sure I pass it over to Larry Sonnenberg. Larry, do you have anything you want to share with us today?
Thanks. Just want to encourage folks, especially the guys that need it. We have Every Man's Battle coming up in Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, so often we go to a few main cities over and over again, but now we're coming to the heart of the country there in Columbus, and Pete, there are many, many states and people who could drive and get to Columbus and not have to fly. And I just want to encourage you to take that trip and do it. And here's why. Here's what a gentleman wrote, a recent EMB. This intense workshop was amazing and life-changing. In under 48 hours, total strangers went from living distance lives from God's self and others to close friendship. There was no shaming, only messages of hope and freedom to those who stay the course. Now begins the hard part, but now I have tools and friendships. I personally found the hope, healing, and the restoration I needed. At times it was incredibly painful, but I'm so glad I worked up the courage to come. Thank you to all of you for investment in our lives and in the kingdom. This isn't a ministry where you hope you change a life. You can know that lives have been changed 1,000%. So, folks, a couple of things. One, man or woman, if you know your husband needs this, guys, you know you need this, give us a call at 800-NEW-LIFE. And, folks, if you believe in life-changing workshops, his first sentence out of the gate, this workshop was amazing and life-changing, and that, you know, you can count on change. This is not a hope for change ministry. So we need your help, we need your support, and we're grateful when you do. So thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing that, Larry. And again, you know, if you want to take part in that Every Man's Battle, again, it's happening April 8th, as he said, in Columbus, Ohio. And if you register before Friday, you can actually save $200. And so I encourage you to take part in that. Again, we're taking your calls today. If you want to reach out, 1-800-229-3000. I just want to, as we wrap up this segment here, just anything else, maybe just in general, how we can encourage others that may find themselves like Jackie in a place where community is risky? I mean, I heard that theme from her, like, how do I open up in a place that doesn't feel safe, and how do I do that again, even if the conditions are better? Anything you guys would throw in there? Because I have a feeling some people are like, well, I tried being vulnerable. I tried opening up to people, and they let me down, or it wasn't safe, and how can I do that again? How would you encourage somebody that's in that place?
I would say just take one baby step, just one baby step to do the thing that would move you closer towards healing. And like I said, I mean, I had to sit outside a recovery group and look at people going in before I felt safe enough to go in, just to assure that I didn't know anybody. And I mean, somebody could have walked in after me. I don't know. I'm just saying that was my first step. And once I was there, I really found that I could develop some safety. Just like Larry read in the testimony with people I didn't even know, the guys at the Every Man's Battle, right? And that happens, and it's amazing and unanticipated. You know, you go and you're scared. Do it afraid. And then you realize that there's connection that you would have never found had you not tried it.
Yeah. Yeah. John Powell, I think, famously said years ago, he said, if I show you the real me and you don't accept the real me, that's the only me I have. And so this is risky. And I just feel like it was just helpful just to pause there a bit, because I know there are people who are struggling to feel like they can't open up again because of previous hurt. And so be encouraged today. Community is worth it in spite of the messiness, as Alice said earlier, because it is totally, totally worth it. Again, we're taking your calls today, 1-800-229-3000 here at New Life Live. Thanks so much for joining us today. And we're going to be with you for the next 15 minutes or so. If we can't get to your call, we'll try and get to it in the next hour. And so I hope this has been helpful to you. Be encouraged. Community is king. People around us matter. They need to help us find healing and recovery. And so do everything you can to find it. You'll be benefiting from it.
find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Thanks again for joining us today. Zach Matcha here filling in for Steve Arterburn with Dr. Sherry Keffer and Dr. Alice Benton. I want to kind of share some workshops we have coming up here soon. We have our new online Transforming Grief workshop that is happening on May 7th. Grief is something that grips all of us at one time or another. Please take advantage of that resource if you find yourself in that season of life. We also have our next Restore event on July 15th through the 17th in Dallas. And then Intimacy and Marriage is happening July 22nd through the 24th in Washington, D.C. Again, if you're looking for resources or ways to grow, man, those are great opportunities for you to take part in. We're going to jump to our next call today. We have Mary on the line. Mary is calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Mary. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an 18-year-old granddaughter. She lives about 4 hours from me this summer. She came up to visit me and her other grandmother. The other grandmother and I live maybe 10, 15 miles from each other. She came up, unbeknownst to us, with the idea she was not going back home. She really ran away. But she enrolled at high school to finish her last high school last year here in the D.C. area. But since she's been here, and we knew there were issues at home, and we both of us grandparents know the adult children that we raised, and we know there are issues. But she's been in the bed on and off for 2 and 3 days at a time, not bathing, not eating. We're just a quandary, depressed. So upset to see this child like this, and yet at 18, she just turned 18 in October. We've worked with the local police, mental health authorities, a hospital in the area, but nothing we can do because of her age. Any suggestions?
Well, thanks for calling, Mary. I appreciate you sharing that. Alice, do you want to jump in and see how we can help Mary today?
Mary, who does she live with?
The other grandmother. Both the other grandmother and I are 76. And that's about 10 miles from me. So we go back and forth. She goes back and forth sometimes. I'm in a small apartment. The other grandmother has a house.
And how are her parents responding to her moving away like this?
Angry, but they're angry people, even though they themselves are mental health therapists. One of them's an alcoholic and the other is a drug and alcohol therapist, but both of them are mental health therapists. But they have anger issues and they've not treated her well through the years.
My goodness. Talk about her confusion. To have two parents that are therapists that are angry, and she's been on the other end of their barb. I mean, that must be so confusing to her. Does she talk about that with you or her other grandma?
No, she will not. She will not talk with us. She locks herself in the room, cries for hours, will not bathe, eat. It's just so sad.
Yeah.
Every now and then we can get her to come out, take a few bites of food. And every now and then she will go to school. She's an honor student, but missing way too much. She's very bright, but painful. The other grandmother and I are well aware through the years what's been going on. We, through the summers, would take her and enjoy her, but it's left deep wounds.
Well, you know, it sounds like the other grandma might be feeling a little out of control or helpless, maybe even being held hostage in her own home by a depressed teenager.
Totally. You've hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
And I want you to share, Alice, you've done a ton of work with parents and kids. Can you just speak to this a bit as far as what you think they might be able to do? It's such a horrible feeling to feel that helpless, but we really aren't helpless. There's all kinds of choices. I heard you say the police, the local, you know, like you've tried some of those traditional measures to get her intervention.
Well, and there is so much available here, but because she's 18, if she were 17 and three quarters, no problem.
Yes.
The police would come and take her for evaluation. No, but not at 18. She's an adult.
Your power is truly limited. I do want to acknowledge that you two must be the safest people in her life, and the fact that she has sought safety with you two speaks volumes about your position in her life and how much you've already invested in her. And I want to ask if you've both considered the principle of leverage, because she has things she needs from you. That only you and the other grandmother are able to provide, such as the roof over her head, the food she eats, access to screens, money, I would assume. It doesn't sound like she's working.
Okay.
And sometimes we have to leverage those resources that we're willing to share, linking it to the help that a family member needs but has up to this point been unwilling to accept. So tell me any thoughts that you've had about that and what your granddaughter needs from both of you that you might be able to link to receiving treatment.
We've been a little hesitant. We've tried the leverage, like you say. We've been a little hesitant for fear that she'll harm herself.
And yet if she does harm herself, there's your 911. If she threatens suicide, 911.
Sure, absolutely.
So
the police have said that if she threatens that or even indicates,
yeah,
then they can take, but we're concerned that she would do it during the night and it would be too late when we found her in the morning.
And you know what? This is the kind of fear that paralyzes us. And Alice is talking about internet, right? Like, what if you just didn't have internet in your house and that dropped off? And she was like, what? You know, because she might be in her room spending time on the screen.
Mm. Yeah.
Talking to people you have no idea who she's talking to.
Correct.
She needs food, and not that you take food away, but you're like, okay, we need to have an arrangement here. If you're going to be here, right, that might be that you bring a therapist in. But I think sometimes we get so disabled by the fear of what somebody's going to do that we do nothing. And that does something. It just makes things worse.
You know, of course, the harm that you're concerned about is perhaps cutting or taking her life, severe harm. In the meantime, she is doing harm to herself, and the longer it goes on, the higher the risk that she will engage in more significant self-harm. So I would try some lower levels of leverage first and see if they have any effect, such as Sherry pointed out, cutting off access to internet, cutting off access to television. I would even consider, I wouldn't do it right away, but I would consider simplifying the food that was available to her, so removing junk food, for instance, removing some of those more pleasurable foods until she's willing to start talking more to the two of you and to have one conversation over the phone with a clinician. I would link those two things and see how she responds to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What book would be a good book for her? How We Love Our Kids?
Yes.
Yeah, How We Love Our Kids. We'll send that off to you, Mary.
Yeah, and Mary, I want to say this is a team grandparents day, because I am so appreciative of the grandparents who are doing everything they can to care well for their grandkids. And Mary, you're doing that just simply by calling today, and I appreciate just your willingness and openness to share that. And I'm just thankful that we, you know, even when maybe there's situations that are preventing healing can take place, or that it just is unable to because of the situations, there are other people that maybe can introduce, as you guys said, boundaries, introducing other resources and other ways to try to help point them in the right direction. And so I'm thankful that that New Life is a place that people like Mary who find themselves in a situation, not necessarily by choice, to find some help. I'll give you the last word, Sherry, of how we can help anybody that might find themselves in that situation where they feel kind of gripped without being unable to know what to do.
I'd say just call us here, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You know, we love to help. I know there's a lot of you that are waiting. Hold on. We'll get to your call next. But just let us help you. We want to help you heal.
Absolutely. And again, present your request to God by prayer and petition.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.
Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.